Welcome to the Future of Supply Chain, where each episode we'll sit down with entrepreneurs, investors, and industry veterans to discuss innovation, technology, and the most exciting opportunities in trucking and logistics as we build the future of supply chain together. Be sure to head over to podcast.dynamo.vc to keep up to date with our latest content or subscribe on the podcast platform of your choice. Now, let's get into the show. Here's our host, Santosh Sankar.
Hey, ladies and gents, welcome back to the Future Supply Chain Podcast. I'm your host, Santosh Sankar, and joining me today is Alden Woodrow, co-founder, CEO of Ike. Welcome, Alden.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to have you on here, and I'm going to give a special shout out to Chung at Basiset, who connected us and made this happen.
One of our investors and one of our favorites. They are always on the lookout for making connections like this. So excited to have to talk more about the company.
Indeed. And really, I just kind of want to start with, like, what's the Alden Woodrow story? How did you get into the world of self-driving trucks and supply chain?
Yeah, so I've been working now on trucks for several years, which, you know, in Silicon Valley is a long time, and in the freight industry is not very long at all. But my origin story is really I've spent the last decade or so as a product manager working on new technologies in energy and aerospace originally, and then kind of fell in love with trucking and transportation when I joined Uber. So I joined the company in late 2016, joined ATG specifically, which is the automation group within Uber, to work on trucks. And as part of that process, started to learn more about trucking and about freight and logistics, and just really fell in love with the industry. And the same is true of my co-founders who also were there at Uber. And we all just kind of saw eye to eye about sort of a different philosophy around how to build a product in this space, and also saw eye to eye about our appreciation for the importance of freight in our economy and our way of life, and really built a passion for the industry that we're kind of continuing on that journey now today.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people in our audience likely know Ike, but would love to kind of get the skinny on, you know, kind of where are you guys at on this path to developing autonomous trucks?
Yeah. So in terms of background, as I mentioned, my co-founders and I, so Nancy Sun and Jur Vandenberg, and I started Ike in 2018. We had worked together at Uber on trucks, and that's where we met. That's where we, as I said, fell in love with the industry, and where we really started to realize that we shared a lot of hard-earned experience from different places, but a kind of a philosophy about how to build a real product in automation. And of course, there's a lot of excitement about automation, about self-driving cars over the last decade or so. But really, the reality has not held up to the hype, right? And so in 2016, when we first met and first started working together, we started to develop this, what I would call a much more pragmatic view on how to build a valuable commercial product in this space. One that moved away from, you know, building a magic robot that can do everything, which of course is super exciting, and focusing really on something that can be focused and really constrained, but still be super valuable. And I can maybe tell you more about that. But we worked together with a great team, a small group within ATG. It became clear after a while that that Uber was not the right place to build a truck product for very good reasons. The company was really focused on cars. And so a number of us decided to leave in 2018, but we still wanted to work together and we still wanted to work on trucks. We kind of looked around the landscape, saw what was going on, and felt like we had an opportunity to do things differently and apply a bunch of that hard-earned experience to build a safe and reliable and commercially valuable automated trucking product. So my co-founders and I all come from kind of different experiences. They worked at Waymo and Apple and built electric motorcycles and worked in academia. I worked at Google prior to Uber and worked on some interesting new technologies. And so we were able to kind of come together and set this very different path compared to kind of what we saw at the time happening in the space and actually what we see happening still. And then we were really fortunate to be able to attract a lot of great people, many of whom we'd worked with before at a number of different companies and efforts, We have folks on the team who've worked together at 5 companies. And so we were able to draw in a number of really talented folks, and that kind of got us going. And we're on a very long journey here. We've got a lot more work to do. I'll tell you more about some of our progress, I think, during this conversation. But we have this vision for how automated trucks can help improve the industry in a bunch of ways. And we're not there yet, but we made some really good progress over the last few years.
And, you know, kind of taking a step back and taking a temperature on the industry, like, where are we in 2020 as we think about, you know, autonomous long haul trucking?
Yeah. So, you know, as I said, I think there's been a lot of excitement and enthusiasm for the opportunity with this technology. You know, if you think about kind of the first wave of automation for vehicles, it was really focused on passenger cars in the 2000s, right? Google led the way on that effort, and a number of other companies kind of started up really focusing on the opportunity to build robot cars. I think we're part of this second or maybe even third wave now, where we took a step back from that after many of us had some experience with how hard it is to automate passenger cars driving around in cities in these really complex environments. And especially with people in the mix, right, which adds a whole user experience complexity and a number of other factors. And so I think collectively, there are a number of people kind of said at the same time, wow, trucking would actually be a really interesting application of this technology. And my co-founders and I were sort of part of one of those groups thinking about that opportunity. So that was now several years back. I think the third wave part of this is, we've started to realize how hard even this challenge is, right? Even though we are in a number of ways constraining the kind of product challenge, right? We're building technology that is going to automate trucks only on the highway. So not drive on surface streets or in industrial yards. We think that makes our task massively simpler, but it's still really difficult. And so where I'd say we're at today as an industry is, you know, some good progress has been made. Certainly, there's a lot of excitement and noise still about the opportunity here in the space. But there's huge, huge amounts of work to do in terms of the hardware that's needed to actually have these vehicles operate safely on the roadways, the software to control them in effective ways, the regulatory frameworks and environment that need to evolve, and also some of the commercial partnerships and the evolution of the approach to business, which I think we'll talk more about. Now, again, we've made at Ike a bunch of progress on all those things, but we started the company with this very long-term view on, you know, this is a multi-year effort. And in fact, I think you'll appreciate this as an investor. We walked into a bunch of partner meetings when we were raising capital in 2018, and we showed a roadmap that I think most VCs are not used to seeing, right? It had a number of years on it. And what we said was, if you want us to launch a product in this space in the next 18 months, you should not invest in our company, because we are taking a very long-term approach here, and we're doing a lot of things that are going to get sort of tangible results and clear value in several years rather than in several weeks or several months. And we think that's what it's going to take to actually get to the finish line and beyond here, because there's, as I said, you know, a tremendous amount of work to do on a number of fronts to actually kind of fulfill the promise of this technology, which we of course think is just massive.
Yeah. And, you know, I'd be curious, like, do you view, over the road, like, as your sole focus, or do you think, like, in the medium long run, you would ever kind of get into other parts or other opportunities of the kind of logistics transportation, opportunity?
Yeah, I think there's a huge number of opportunities, and we're certainly excited about how we could apply our expertise and our technology to solve problems in the industry. Our view is that, and again, I think you can accuse us of being maybe a little too pragmatic or too focused relative to most startups. We think it's going to be incredibly valuable and incredibly big of an opportunity to automate highway goods movement, right? 70% of the miles that trucks drive every year on highways, it's 170 billion miles a year. That is a multi-$100 billion market opportunity. And so, you know, while I think 50 years from now, our truck's going to be driving around all over the place and our robot's going to be doing all sorts of things. Yeah, definitely. And that's already happening in a number of places, right? But we think trucks on highways is kind of the big market opportunity and the big scalability opportunity in terms of building something with a pretty constrained scope that can actually scale up in a way that kind of looks like software. So we're pretty focused on that. And you know, when we're a big successful company someday in the future, I'm sure we'll have other ambitions. But for now, we think the task ahead of us is plenty big.
And you know, I remember reading in the early days when you announced your round, there was a mention on how you had hard forked Neuro's core technology. And I'd be curious, like, where's that gone? Is that a point of differentiation today that you've been able to lean on as a technology business?
Yeah, it's a great point. That was a really unusual choice, I think. It's something that hasn't really happened in our space to this point. And we're really proud of that and proud of our relationship and friendship with the Neuro team. So I can tell you a little bit about the background and kind of the purpose there. My co-founder had a strong relationship with the founders of Neuro going back to academia to many, many years ago when they worked together on various projects. And as we were thinking about starting Ike, what we realized was there was this really interesting opportunity to give Neuro a chance to apply this really, really strong automation stack that they had built to a new application, right? They're focused on delivery robots. Your audience is probably familiar with Neuro. Great company. They've made a lot of progress. They build these little toasters that drive around on city streets and deliver groceries and pizza and other things. So they're really focused in that area, but they built this incredibly strong infrastructure and this great stack that we thought was quite powerful. So there was an opportunity to take what they built and apply it to trucks and to do that in a way that would give us a huge head start and kind of skip over a lot of the stuff you have to do in the early stages. You know, various infrastructure and data logging and all sorts of other things that take time and effort and capital to build. So the opportunity for us was to get this this kind of unique technology advantage, this tailwind and this big leap ahead. The opportunity for them was to be able to have kind of a separate lottery ticket of sorts where they could just, you know, fork their technology into something else. And when we're super successful, they'll see some benefit from that. So it was a really interesting overlap. It was really focused on, I think, mutual respect and trust. The Neuro founders and the Neuro team are just of the highest integrity and obviously very smart folks and saw the opportunity. And we found a way to kind of make the pie bigger together. So they are a minority shareholder in Ike as a company. And we have a copy of everything that Neuro had built through September of 2018. And this was right before they raised almost $1 billion from SoftBank, which is of course a nice validation of the strength of their technology. So we do see that as a big advantage. We've changed the tech stack in a number of ways. We've built a whole bunch of new things that are more focused on trucks, but it gave us this kind of head start that we thought would be really valuable. And looking back on that, we would 100% do that deal again, because it allowed us to kind of skip over a lot of the things that I think typical AV startups have to do in order to attract investors, to kind of demonstrate progress, all those things. And it really allowed us to do what we wanted to do, which was focus on the long term and really build the things that ultimately are going to matter for a commercial product.
Yeah. And you know, I'd be curious to like get your take. And we were investors in an early attempt at solving this problem in Starsky, so can appreciate how difficult it is. But kind of how do you like to kind of think about what you're building at Ike and the approach and the differentiation relative to, you know, your host of competitors, perhaps, is how most others would think about it.
Yeah.
The kind of Embarks of the world, Two Simples.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a number of places where I think we want to do things differently, again, from what we've kind of seen out there. It's a little hard to read between the lines on, you know, what's really going on in our space. I think there's a lot of, you know, kind of cool PR, but it's hard to know kind of what's really happening. And so we really try to just focus on what we think is the right path. And there's a few places where we're doing things that I think appear at least to be quite different. The first is technically, and the second is commercially. So from a technical standpoint, one of the things we decided to do early on was to take an aerospace type approach to the development of our system, a systems engineering based approach. So three of our first 10 hires at Ike were systems engineers, which is pretty unusual, right? And what systems engineers do for us is they set requirements. They tell the rest of our engineering team what we need to be able to build to be successful. And they help us then test against those requirements and make sure that our system is working properly. And that's something that in our previous experience was generally pretty lacking, right? You had what I tend to call sort of like the dating app style approach to development, where you're just sort of building stuff and you've got smart people and they're going and trying to figure it all out. What we wanted to do up front was build a more clear roadmap and kind of empower our hardware and software teams to understand what they needed to build and what it would look like when they were successful. And so that's what we've spent a big part of the last 2 years doing, is setting requirements, building the infrastructure and the workflows that allow us to test against those requirements, and then doing some development. And that's a pretty unusual approach, because what it means is that we can't make a cool time-lapse video. I guess we could, but we haven't really focused on features. We've really focused on building this this machine that allows us to actually demonstrate that our system is working at a high level of performance. And so, you know, one specific example here is, up until very recently, we had not engaged our automation system on public roads, not even a single time, right? We'd focused entirely on offline testing, so simulation in the cloud, and on private track testing, because we think that's actually a really effective way of making progress and doing it in a way where we can control the risk exposure. And so that's 2 years of effort to get to the point where we have such a high performance system, a system that's now passing hundreds of requirements that we've set that allow us to take the step of beginning some limited public road testing. And that is valuable in some ways, but really we think a lot of the effort should be and can be in offline testing and in private track testing, right? And so so we've made a lot of progress there, and I think we're really happy with that decision, even though it's involved a lot of what I call the invisible work, right? There's a lot of stuff that's really hard to explain to the outside world why it's so valuable and powerful. And I think we'll see those results in the future because we feel a lot of confidence about that approach. And then on the second piece on the commercial side, I think we can maybe dig into this a bit more, but we also wanted to take this different philosophy of, rather than trying to do everything ourselves, rather than trying to become a logistics business, we feel like there's an opportunity to basically power existing logistics businesses. So from a business model standpoint, we are putting technology in the hands of existing fleets. We're giving them the automation technology and selling them a subscription, essentially a SaaS type product that allows them to use automated trucks in their fleet along with the rest of their products and services. And that's something that I think has been pretty attractive to a number of companies that we're now starting to work with. We obviously made an announcement about this pretty recently. And what we feel like that allows us to do as a company is to focus on the technology, focus on the things that we're going to be good at, right? Systems engineering, computer vision, validation, and let our partners focus on being really good logistics businesses and helping make them better with this technology that we think is going to be pretty valuable.
And, you know, a lot of what you're talking about, a lot of the tooling, process, infrastructure, like in my head, like the word that's showing up in big letters is safety. And a big thing that we've all had to grapple with is that there's a lack of like federal, I'm not going to say there's a lack of federal guidance, but there's a lack of like real certainty and frameworks around how AVs will be deemed safe or unsafe. And I know that's especially important because as you look to enable your customers, when you tend to say over the road trucking, you're usually moving over state lines. I'd be curious, like, how have you navigated this intransparency or this uncertainty around regulation?
Yeah, it's a great question. We spend a lot of time engaging there. I think this is a place where, you know, previous experience working on new technologies in other industries is really valuable, because I think there's a very consistent experience there. And that is that, regulators and law enforcement and other representatives from the public sector take their jobs really seriously, right? They have a responsibility to make sure that new technologies like ours can operate safely in the world and can do them according to the rules and regulations that have been established by, you know, in over-the-road trucking by FMCSA and by other other regulatory authorities. And so they are, I think, enthusiastic about what we're doing and they want to see it succeed, but they also understandably want to make sure that we do it in the right way. And so the approach that we take there is to go in at a number of different levels, right? Federal, state, and local, and talking with police officers and NGOs and even, you know, union representatives, and talk to them about what we're doing, talk to them about what we're doing to walk the walk on safety, how we think the technology we're building can actually help create better livelihoods for truck drivers, a number of those different things. And also explain to them that we expect that we're going to need to you know, prove it to them. We don't expect them to take our word for it at this point. We have work to do to actually demonstrate how we can do this safely and how we can do it effectively and how we can build a real commercial product. So we do things like release the safety report that we've put out publicly, including a version that we just updated that goes into a tremendous amount of detail about the approach we take to development and how we try to minimize the risk of our testing and our deployment. We do things like put on our website a inventory of all of our vehicles, a map of our operations, and a summary of our DOT safety and compliance scores, right? So that anybody can go look on our website on the safety page and get a sense for what we're doing and where we're doing it and what scale. We think that's information that the public has a right to know. And really, that's just about helping all of those stakeholders understand that we're committed to trying to do this in a safe way. And I think that helps. But with respect to the actual regulatory frameworks, I think our view is that everything is proceeding along pretty much as it should, right? There's no real rush to get federal or state rules in place today because the technology isn't ready. And so there's certainly ways that we can work effectively with a bunch of those organizations, and we talk to them all the time. But what we say when we talk to them is we want to invest the time and effort to work together to get the frameworks in place that are going to work well for everybody, right? And because the technology still has a few years of investment required to really get to that point, we're here to work with you over that time and make sure that we create something together. So in the meantime, in California and here in the US, I think there are a number of ways that we're enabled to do the testing we think is necessary. And when the time comes to kind of take the next step of having trucks without drivers in them, we're pretty confident that the frameworks are going to be in place to do that, so long as we can do our part to demonstrate that the technology is ready and that we've put the right pieces in place to make sure that it can be safe.
And, you know, hand in hand with safety, we have safety drivers in order to take control of a vehicle as well as monitor a vehicle in the inning we're in around building up to a truly autonomous solution. I'd be curious, like, when do you see safety drivers being pulled from cabs?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, we obviously have our internal roadmap and we have some targets we're working towards that we don't talk about publicly. I would say, I think as important of a question as that is, what really matters ultimately is, when is this technology creating value? When is it actually saving lives and increasing the productivity of our transportation system, right? Like, that's what success starts to look like. And taking the driver out of a truck is just really a step along the way, the same as the first time you put a sensor on a truck or the first time you engage the system on public roads. That'll be a step along the way, but it's actually really just like the beginning of that part of the journey, right? And so the short answer is that's several years away, but I think the point that we're oriented towards, which is, you know, when is this technology widely available? When is it accomplishing the things that we envision in terms of the effect that it can have on road safety, on the productivity of transportation, you know, on the effects, the positive effects we think this can have for truck drivers, keeping them closer to home? That's what really matters. And that's even further away. But, you know, we think it's worth making that investment of time and effort over the years to come to make that happen, because it could be really powerful.
And around kind of the safety reports, I know the one thing that people always jest about is that they tend to be around disengagements in California. And I'd be curious to hear kind of how do you think about and guide the reader around what a disengagement is and what it is not? Because that definition disengagement can be wildly different across the board from company to company.
Yeah, it's a great question. So we actually don't track disengagements. I think, you know, within the industry, it's sort of become conventional wisdom of sorts that you know, things like MPI, miles per intervention, are actually not a great metric for measuring progress, right, as you know. Yeah. And so that's one of the places where, you know, we talk with regulators in the state of California about how we might upgrade some of the reporting requirements for trucking in the rulemaking process that's forthcoming from them to align incentives for safety a bit better and maybe measure progress in ways that are a little bit more meaningful and kind of more consistent across companies. So we're going to talk more about this in the future, but the way I would sort of tie it back to the systems engineering approach that we take here, which is that we think about requirement failures rather than about disengagements, right? In other words, you can fail a requirement in our system without a disengagement happening. And that is still something that we need to fix. And you can also have a requirement failure that results in the driver needing to take over. But what really matters is, from a performance standpoint, are we meeting the requirements that we've set for the system? Because over the very long term, we need to have a system that meets the requirements that we've set, you know, many, many, many orders of magnitude over in terms of performance. And so we're building towards that. We're seeing some great results here in the kind of middle phase. And that's where we think it makes sense to sort of measure. But that's pretty hard because you have to actually build a lot of the infrastructure and a lot of the fundamental requirements that we've set in order to be able to measure those things effectively. And so I think we're going to move in that direction as an industry. I think more and more people are talking about this approach as a way of kind of measuring progress and a way of fundamentally architecting your system. And so I'm hopeful that we can have, you know, kind of a more sophisticated conversation about this sort of stuff and help educate regulators about how that is a way that we can, you know, sort of compare performance and help the public understand what's happening in ways that are going to be a little bit easier to understand and a little bit more consistent with, you know, what's really required from a technical standpoint.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I love that approach. So kind of shifting gears here, you recently came out with news that you're working with Ryder, NFI, DHL. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so this comes back to what I mentioned about our commercial approach. You know, again, we want to be a technology business. And so from the very start of the company, we said, let's take a business model and a go-to-market strategy that is focused on building a SaaS product rather than a logistics business. And, you know, Starsky did some super interesting things. Of course, you mentioned you're an investor in them. They took, I think, kind of the opposite approach. And I understand the argument for that, which is, you know, we're going to go do it ourselves. We're going to understand trucking very deeply and kind of build this capability. We think there's a kind of almost the opposite approach as an intriguing opportunity, which is to really focus on the technology side and essentially plug into existing networks. So the fleets that you mentioned, Ryder, NFI, DHL, those are some of the fleets that we're working with as part of this customer program we developed. Collectively, the customers that we've signed have reserved the first 1,000 trucks that are powered by our technology. What that means is they are going to buy trucks equipped with Ike's automation system from our OEM partner, who also happens to be, you know, one of their OEM providers. And then they're going to enable this automation capability by paying us an annual subscription fee. And that, we think, aligns incentives really nicely to put the technology in these fleets' hands. And that, as you know, is something that these fleets and others are pretty familiar with, right? They're adopting all sorts of new technologies all the time. There's nothing particularly special about this other than we think the opportunity, the sort of the value that can get created here. And so we're just sort of following in the footsteps in some ways of telematic systems and ELDs and a number of other types of technologies, electrification, warehouse automation, that some of these supply chain businesses have been exploring and adopting for years. So we're really excited about this. We've actually been working with several of these fleets now for quite some time. A few of these agreements were signed last year. And what's really cool about this, beyond kind of the adoption piece, you know, the 1,000 trucks that are gonna get put into these companies' fleets over time, is what's happening right now, which is that we get to work with these incredibly sophisticated and large scale logistics businesses to make sure that we're building the right product, right? So I mentioned at the beginning, I'm a product manager historically, and I get really excited about the user of the technology and understanding them and helping build something that's actually useful. And so what we're doing now is collaborating really closely, getting a lot of feedback, testing a bunch of things together, and basically making use of this incredible expertise that these fleets have and hard-earned experience of their own that we think would be pretty hard for us to get by building up our own fleet. And so this has worked out great. I think we'll have more to share in the relatively near future about some of the progress we're making there, including, I think, some of the other fleets we're working with. But it was a nice moment just recently to be able to start talking about this. And you know, obviously, I think the fleets we're working with are excited about the technology and about the opportunity and about the approach that we're taking.
And so kind of shifting gears here, thinking about company building, I'd be curious, you know, your IP partnership with Neuro, you mentioned like it's a bit unusual, but I'd be curious, like, how did you approach that decision to enter that partnership, to leverage some of that existing technology to build on top of?
Yeah, it really started from some kind of casual conversations, right? As I mentioned, my co-founder had a really strong relationship with the Neuro founders. And, you know, there were, I think, a number of different paths we might have taken as we started to explore the opportunity. It all sort of eventually came around to us aligning on this idea that we wanted to control our own destiny. We wanted to kind of head off in our own direction and be really focused. We have a huge amount of respect for the Neuro team, but they also didn't want to get distracted by trying to build a second product in-house, right? And so all the pieces just kind of lined up in a way that worked out quite fortuitously. We also spent some time at Neuro, you know, in their building, our engineering team doing a lot of pretty deep diligence on their system, right? We didn't want to license technology that wasn't going to work or wasn't actually going to help us. And so Yur and several of our early engineering leaders spent several months actually digging around in the code base, talking with Neuro's team, exploring a bunch of things, and ultimately coming to the conclusion that this was the best automation stack in the world because of the investments they'd made. And so the opportunity for us to get our hands on that and start to apply it to trucking was super, super appealing and worth us essentially, you know, giving Neuro some equity in the company. And making sure that they had an ownership stake as well. So, you know, I don't think we went into the conversation thinking this is exactly how it was going to work, but we just sort of found our way there over time by working together and by thinking about, you know, what we wanted to do as a company and kind of what our very long-term goals were, right? Which were to, again, kind of skip over the typical playbook that you often have to pursue and have this really valuable asset that we could then build on top of.
Yep. Yep. No, I think that's super intriguing, and it's not common, as you said. So it's great to hear kind of how you practically went through to make that decision. But kind of shifting gears to customers again, you know, how have you seen customers evaluate, make decisions around autonomous solutions, whether it's Ike or your time at ATG or otherwise?
Yeah, you know, I think it's hard to have those conversations in a lot of the space here because the technology is still in development, right? And so most companies, if you look at, you know, Ryder, NFI, DHL, the fleets that we've announced that we're working with, they want to have conversations with companies that are ready to sell them something, right? That's pretty typical. And so it's a little unusual to go in and say, hey, we want to talk to you about something that's going to be available to you in several years. And in fact, when we set out on the sort of early stages of this strategy and starting to talk with fleets, it wasn't clear at all to me that any fleet was going to be interested in talking to us about this stuff, right? I could imagine them saying, yeah, this all is very exciting, but we've got a real business to run here. And, you know, we've got lots of things we need to deal with. So come back and talk to us in a few years when you're further along. But what we were able to do was say, look, there are some things you're going to need to do in order to be ready to adopt this technology. And we can help you prepare for that. Right. And so that's kind of how we bridge that gap. I think for a lot of other parts of the technology space, particularly in, you know, passenger car automation and other things, it's pretty hard to bridge that gap, right? Because it's still R&D. It's still kind of a vision for the future, not something that you can actually use today. And so I think in terms of getting customers on board to take this really seriously, you do need to figure out how to paint that picture for them and also make it worth their while today, even if you don't have a product that's exactly ready to sell at this moment, right? Yeah. And that was valuable learning for us. I mean, you know, not everybody we talked to was interested. I was kind of surprised at actually how much enthusiasm we got. But there were some fleets that said, you know, this is a tough business. We're really focused on our priorities for this quarter, right? We've got to retain our drivers. We've got to keep our service levels up, and so we're not really ready to think about this. And I think that's totally understandable. So we're happy that we were able to find our way to some fleets that have the bandwidth, have the sophistication, and the experience that allows them to be thinking about the future, even though it's just a few years away, and really starting to make the investments and the effort that's necessary to be ready to adopt this technology and create some competitive advantage when it's time for us to get out on the road.
Yeah. And, you know, would love to kind of wrap up here. And I'd be curious, as somebody who's building an AV business, is there a contrarian perspective that you have, an opinion or insight that might fly in the face of conventional perspectives?
Yeah, I mean, I think we probably have a fair number of those. I'd say probably a bunch of the things that we talked about today probably qualify. I sort of highlighted some of those. I think maybe the one I would highlight, since we've talked about safety quite a bit, is that, you know, our view is that driving trucks around on public roads is not nearly as valuable or as meaningful as I think most people assume or most people believe, right? I think investors understandably are really oriented around that as a milestone, right? We got a lot of questions early on about like, when are you going to be on the road, right? When can I take a ride in the truck and those sorts of things? And there is value in that. There's value in demonstrating, some progress. There's value in having your system tie back to the real world and interact with, you know, real road actors. One of the things we believe from the start, and I think we've built more conviction on this over the last 2 years, is that it's actually possible to have a pretty high leverage approach to developing this technology. In other words, really focusing heavily on simulation, really focusing heavily on track testing where you can control the environment and still do some creative things to test your system very consistently in a way that's, you know, full stack. And that while you do need to do some public road testing, and that scale needs to grow a bit over time as you get closer to launch, that actually can be a very small part of your overall development and validation strategy. And so the more important thing about that is that it, in our view, it just really limits your exposure, right? We want to take as little risk as possible as we're building this technology, because that's the most important thing. Mm-hmm. So making that choice, even though it's pretty bold to put out a safety report a year and a half into the company's existence and say, we have not yet engaged our system on public roads. And it's pretty bold to then update that safety report a year later and say, we still haven't done it. We feel that that's the right approach. And we feel really good about the fact that as our system is starting to share the roadway with our neighbors and our community here in the Bay Area and ultimately in other places, that we can feel really good about the performance that our system is at and the work that we've done to try to minimize the risk of something going wrong, because that is the worst possible outcome. And we think every day about how to minimize that risk as much as possible. So yep. My hope is that will continue to be, or that sort of sentiment will grow over time. I think there are other companies that believe similar things, and our shared bond there is that hard-earned experience, right? Having done this a few times now in a few different contexts, gives us the confidence to say, this is how you do this right. And this is how you ultimately build something that can be safe and reliable.
Alden, it's been great to have you on here. We've covered a lot of ground and really look forward to seeing what you and the team at Ike are doing as you're solving this important and difficult problem. Cheers.
Thanks so much, Santosh. It was great talking to you.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a 5-star review and tell us what you liked. And be sure to head over to podcast.dynamo.vc to keep up to date with our latest content or subscribe on the podcast platform of your choice. Until next time.